Hello and welcome to another edition of the Byron York Show, the No Chit Chat Podcast. We like to get right into it today, and what we're going to get right into is this incredible news out of the Supreme Court, an incredible leak, outrageous, amazing leak of a draft decision in which a court majority of at least five justices votes to overturn Roe v. Wade. Still, a draft could have changed, no final decision, but still, it's an incredible development. And what I want to talk about, a lot of angles you could talk about, is what this means for Democratic, with a capital D, Democratic anger at our constitutional system. There's a lot of it, and there's going to be more of it. So anyway, let's start. There are three issues to consider in light of this unprecedented leak to Politico, by the way, of the draft decision. The first is the outrageousness of the leak, and you've probably heard commentators talk about it, and if they're outraged about it, they're right. It's a terrible, terrible development. The second, and much more, as big as the leak is, much more consequential, of course, is the substance of the decision itself. And then the third, and maybe the most consequential of all, is the long-term political effect of the court's move. So, the leak itself was indeed outrageous, and it will damage the court's standing in our political system, as well as the inner workings of the court for a very long time. There's a blog called SCOTUS Blog, very nonpartisan observer of the Supreme Court, and they tweeted right after this happened, quote, "It's impossible to overstate the earthquake this will cause inside the court in terms of the destruction of trust among the justices and staff. This leak is the gravest, most unforgivable sin." Now, you probably know Jonathan Turley, the George Washington University law professor. You see him on Fox News a good bit. He tweeted, "The Politico article represents the greatest crisis that Chief Justice John Roberts has faced in his tenure on the court." So it's a big, big deal. The leak is a big, big deal. But the substance, of course, is bigger. It's historic. Roe has been law for 49 years. If the decision holds, and remember that the leaked draft is, in fact, a draft, and votes and positions could change, but if the decision holds, the abortion issue will return to the states and to state legislatures. At least 26 states have signaled that they plan to outlaw abortion, where it is now legal. Other states will legalize it, and some will make efforts to attract abortion-seeking women to come to those states from the states that have outlawed it. In short, overturning Roe will have far-reaching effects in American life. I don't want to understate that, but that's not what the newsletter, the podcast is about today. But it will have huge and far-reaching effects in American life. But as important as all that is, the political consequences could be even greater for this reason. The decision will turbocharge, just absolutely pour gasoline on, existing Democratic and progressive anger at two, not one, but two critical checks on majority rule that are built into our constitutional system. One is the Electoral College, by which presidents are elected, and the second is the structure and workings of the U.S. Senate. Now that, in turn, will lead to Democratic challenges of the legitimacy of the Supreme Court, because the Supreme Court justices, of course, are nominated by presidents and confirmed by the Senate. There was a scene last week that was really striking. Don't know if you saw it. Funeral, National Cathedral in Washington, funeral service for Madeleine Albright, the former Secretary of State in the Bill Clinton administration. Now, sitting in the front row at the funeral, all in a row, was Joe Biden, Barack Obama, Bill Clinton, Hillary Clinton, and Al Gore, of course, the vice president for Bill Clinton. Now, some observers pointed out that this group, Biden, Obama, Clinton, Clinton, and Gore, this group had won the popular vote in seven of the last eight presidential elections, going back to 1992, 1992, 1996, 2000, 2004, 2008, 2012, 2016, and 2020. Only in 2004 had a Republican, George W. Bush won the popular vote. But two of those people there, Al Gore and Hillary Clinton, won the popular vote but did not become president. They lost their races in 2000 and 2016 because of the Electoral College, when their opponents, George W. Bush and Donald Trump, won the White House. Now, Bush and Trump, of course, nominated four of the five justices voting to overturn Roe. Bush nominated Samuel Alito, the author of the Roe opinion, the draft opinion. Trump nominated Neil Gorsuch, Brett Kavanaugh, and Amy Coney Barrett, who all voted to overturn Roe. By the way, the fifth Republican-appointed justice to vote against Roe is Clarence Thomas, who was appointed by George H.W. Bush. So the bulk of the anti-Roe majority, actually almost all of it, came from presidents who did not win the popular vote. Now you say, well, yes, but Bush won the popular vote in 2004. It's the only time Republicans have won the popular vote since then. He won it in 2004, but he would have never been president in the first place had he not become president without winning the electoral, popular vote in 2000. So when those presidents who did not win the popular vote sent Supreme Court nominations to the Senate, that's where all of that institution's checks on majority rule came into effect. So you have Democrats who have been angry about the Electoral College for quite a while, basically because of the 2000 election and the 2016 election, in which Democrats both won the popular vote each of those years and did not become president. Al Gore in 2000, Hillary Clinton in 2016. So they're already mad about that. And the Electoral College being one of the checks on majorities that are included in the Constitution. So then you have these presidents who didn't win the popular vote, Bush and Trump, send Supreme Court nominations to the Senate, where all of that institution's checks on majority rule came into effect. The most fundamental, and what you're going to hear about, is Democrats charge, this is correctly, that the Senate has significant checks on majority rule. They point out that Democratic senators represent many more people than Republican senators due to the Constitution structure of two senators from each state, regardless of population. So today, you have a 50-50 Senate, 50 Republicans, 50 Democrats. The left-wing publication Vox recently noted that the Democratic half will represent 41,549,000 more people than the Republican half. I'll give you an example. California has two Democratic senators. Together, they represent 39.1 million people. 39.1 million people. Wyoming has two Republican senators. Together, they represent 576,000 people. Big difference. 39,576,000. Both states have two votes in the Senate, which is just, it's just a constitutional reality, and it drives many Democrats absolutely crazy. Then there are the Senate's rules. Now, they're not in the Constitution. The Constitution does not lay out the rules of the Senate, except to the extent that it allows the Senate to make its own rules. And first, there is another check on the majority, the filibuster, that requires 60 votes to pass controversial legislation, which is a lot of legislation these days. So today's Democrats who want, for example, to pack the Supreme Court with more justices cannot do so because their bare majority of 50 votes plus the vice president will not survive a filibuster. So these are the basic checks on majority rule built into our constitutional system or created by the Senate within our Constitution that absolutely drive Democrats nuts, that they were angry about before this Roe decision. And then, one more thing, there is what a willful majority of senators can do. This is not a check on the majority, but it is something that the majority can do in the Senate. I'm going to talk about that next.
Hi everyone, Steve Hilton here. You may have seen my show, The Next Revolution, on Fox News, but did you know about my podcast, California Rebel Base? I live in California. I suffer, along with millions of people, the consequences of the left-wing madness that we get shoved down our throats all the time by the Democrats who've been in charge here in what is pretty much a one-party state. Well, I've started this show, California Rebel Base, to fight back, to be a platform for all the rebels who are trying to change things and turn things around. And the reason it matters to everyone, wherever you live, is because, as we know, the left-wing madness that starts in California does not end in California. It can infect the whole country. So we need to fight back. To help us do that, make sure you join us at California Rebel Base. You can follow us on Apple, Spotify, YouTube, iHeartRadio, wherever you get your podcasts. We'd love to have you part of this movement.
Okay, I said I was going to talk about what a willful majority of senators can do. And I'm going to do that. But first, I did want to say that if you've been listening to the podcast, you like it, it'd be great. It'd be absolutely great if you could subscribe to the podcast. You can do it at iTunes, anywhere you get your podcast. Please subscribe and you can get the Byron York Show every day. Now, what a willful majority of senators can do. Let's go back to February 13th, 2016. Justice Antonin Scalia, longtime conservative justice on the court, appointed by a Republican, died unexpectedly. That's February 13th. On March the 16th, a little more than a month later, Barack Obama, the Democratic president, nominated a judge, Merrick Garland, to replace Scalia. You know, Garland now, of course, he's the attorney general. But then he was a judge. He was picked by Obama to replace Scalia on the Supreme Court. Problem? Republicans had a 54-seat majority in the Senate. And the majority leader, Mitch McConnell, refused to consider the Garland nomination, arguing that since 2016 was an election year, the decision on who should be on the court, who should be selected for the court, should wait and be made by the next president. Democrats were outraged. McConnell, GOP, held firm. But at the heart of it, a lot of Democrats, as mad as they were, they believed that the absolutely deadlocked certain next president, Hillary Clinton, would fill Scalia's seat with a Democrat. Well, things didn't work out for them. So, Trump wins. His victory just heightens Democratic anger about the Electoral College and about the Scalia-Obama-Garland-McConnell affair. And then Trump got to appoint not one, not two, but three justices to the Supreme Court in the span of one term. I mean, some one-term presidents don't get to appoint anybody to the Supreme Court. Trump gets not one, not two, but three appointments to the Supreme Court. So, from the Democratic point of view, Trump's first choice, Neil Gorsuch, was illegitimate because that choice filled the seat that Obama should have been allowed to fill with Merrick Garland. Okay. Then Trump did Brett Kavanaugh. Their Democrats just, you know, were beside themselves trying to kill that one. And then the third of Trump's choices, Amy Coney Barrett, they argued was illegitimate because the vacancy that she filled, which was caused by the death of Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg, who, of course, was appointed by a Democrat. The vacancy occurred in the last weeks of the presidential campaign. The problem is Republicans still controlled the Senate. McConnell and Trump had their way. They confirmed Amy Coney Barrett. Now, remember that as far as some Democrats are concerned, Republican Senate control itself was illegitimate because it did not represent a majority of the U.S. population. And Senate rules made by the illegitimate majority forbade progressives from eliminating the filibuster that frustrates Democratic hopes of remaking the court. And all of that to confirm nominations made by presidents who did not win the popular vote. So they're mad about all that to begin with. And now comes the Roe decision, even without the leak. Leak's a big deal. It's outrageous, but it's not the biggest thing. Even without the leak, a decision overturning Roe would have caused an explosion inside the Democratic world, fueling longstanding anger about the nature of our political institutions. Now it has happened. Now it has happened. The anger about the Electoral College, the anger about the nature of the Senate, the anger of about what happened with the Supreme Court, with Merrick Garland, with Neil Gorsuch, with Amy Coney Barrett, with Brett Kavanaugh, with Donald Trump, with Mitch McConnell, with the whole bunch of them. The anger about all of this is just coming to the fore now. What comes next is difficult to predict. But what I wanted to discuss with you today was this existing Democratic and progressive anger about the very nature the constitutional nature of our system of electing presidents and of the unit and the structure of the U.S. Senate. These are things that were there. They've been the cause of unhappiness and frustration and anger before this, and this is just going to turbocharge them, absolutely turbocharge them. So that's one of the things we're going to be seeing. We're going to be seeing a lot of fighting as this Supreme Court decision comes fully to light, but that's going to be a big part of it. So thanks so much for joining us. Always appreciate it when you can join us. Hope you can join us again soon for another edition of the Byron York Show.